The Master and Margarita by Mikhail Bulgakov. Part 1. What are you already? I am part of that power that always wishes evil and always performs the good. Goethe, Faust. Chapter 1. Never talk to strangers. Once, upon an unusually hot hour of sunset in spring, two gentlemen appeared at Patriarch's Ponds in Moscow. The first sported a grey summer suit and was short, plump, and bald. He carried his respectable fedora in his hand, and black, horn-rimmed spectacles of supernatural proportions adorned his clean-shaven face. The second, a broad-shouldered young man with curly reddish hair, wore a cowboy shirt, craggy white trousers, black trainers, and a checked cap cocked to the back of his head. The first was none other than Mikhail Alexandrovich Berlioz, chairman of the board of one of Moscow's largest literary organizations, known by the acronym Masolit, and editor of a thick literary journal. His young companion was the poet Ivan Nikolaevich Ponyarov, who wrote under the pen name of Homeless. Upon reaching the shade of the freshly budding lindens, the writers first dashed towards a brightly painted booth bearing the sign Beer and Sodas. By the way, it is worthwhile to note the first strange thing about that horrible May afternoon. Not a single human being was to be found in the vicinity of the booth, or indeed in the entire alley that ran parallel to Malaya Bronaya Street. At an hour when it seemed almost impossible to breathe, when the sun, scorching Moscow, was plunging into the dry haze somewhere beyond the Sadovaya Ring Road, no one sought shelter in the shade of the lindens. No one sat down on the benches. The alley was empty.
"Mineral water?"
Berlioz requested.
"We don't have any," the woman in the booth replied, taking offence for some reason.
"Got beer?"
Homeless inquired hoarsely.
"Beer's coming later tonight," the woman replied.
"What do you have?" asked Berlioz.
"Apricot-flavoured water. Only it's warm," said the woman.
"We'll take it, we'll take it."
The apricot water produced copious yellow foam, and the air began to reek of barber shop. After drinking their fill, the writers were immediately overcome with hiccups. They paid up and sat on a bench, facing the pond and away from Bronaya. Then something else strange happened, this time to Berlioz alone. His hiccups stopped suddenly, and his heart thumped and seemed to vanish for a moment. When it resumed beating, it was as though a blunt point had lodged in it. What's more, Berlioz was suddenly overcome with fear, fear unfounded, yet so powerful that he wanted to flee the Patriarchs that very moment and never look back. Berlioz glanced round miserably, unsure of what frightened him so. He grew pale, dabbed his handkerchief on his forehead, and wondered, "What's wrong with me? This sort of thing has never happened before. Heart's misbehaving. I've worn myself out. To hell with everything. It's time to take that Kislovodsk vacation." And then the muggy air thickened before him and wove itself into a transparent gentleman of the strangest appearance. A tiny jockey cap on his tiny head, a short, checked, equally ethereal jacket on his shoulders. The gentleman was 7 feet tall, yet narrow-chested and incredibly thin, and with an insolent mouth, may I add. Berlioz's life had not prepared him well for unnatural phenomena. His eyes bulging, Berlioz paled even more and managed a single confused thought. "This cannot be." Alas, it was. The tall, transparent gentleman hovered before him, swaying left and right without touching the ground. By this point, Berlioz was so overcome with horror that he shut his eyes. When he opened them again, he saw that it was all over. The haze had dissolved, the checkered man had vanished, and so had the blunt point from his heart.
"What the devil!" exclaimed the editor. "You know, Ivan, I nearly had a stroke just now from all this heat. Even something like a hallucination."
Berlioz attempted a chuckle, but alarm still darted in his eyes and made his hands shake. However, he eventually calmed down, fanned himself with his handkerchief, and, managing a lively, "Well then," resumed the speech interrupted by the apricot water. The speech, as it was later determined, involved Jesus Christ. Apparently, the editor had commissioned the poet to write a long anti-religious poem for the next issue of the journal. Ivan Nikolaevich managed to compose the poem in record time, but unfortunately it completely failed to please the editor. Though Homeless had painted the protagonist, that is to say Jesus, in the darkest of colours, the editor was of the opinion that the entire thing had to be rewritten. And therefore the editor was giving the poet a sort of lecture about Jesus, aiming to underscore the poet's principal mistake. It is difficult to say what exactly undermined Ivan Nikolaevich's piece, the descriptive power of his talent, or his complete ignorance of the subject. But his Jesus turned out to be a very lifelike, if unattractive, character. Berlioz, however, wanted to show the poet that the crux of the matter lay not in Jesus's nature, good or bad, but in the fact that Jesus, as a person, had never existed in the first place. That all the stories about this character were simple inventions, ordinary myths. It should be noted that the editor was a well-read man who supported his argument very skillfully with references to ancient historians. For instance, neither the famous Philo of Alexandria nor the brilliantly educated Josephus Flavius had mentioned so much as a word of Jesus' existence. Displaying profound erudition, Mikhail Alexandrovich also informed the poet, among other things, that the description of Jesus' execution in Book 15, Chapter 44, of Tacitus's famous Annals was nothing more than a later insertion and a forgery. Everything the editor now described was new to the poet, who listened alertly. His spirited green eyes were fixed on Mikhail Alexandrovich, and only occasionally would he hiccup and quietly curse the apricot water. "As a rule, there isn't a single Eastern religion," Berlioz was saying, "that doesn't involve a virgin begetting a god. Failing to invent anything original, the Christians created their Jesus in an identical manner. Jesus, who never actually lived. That is precisely where the main emphasis should be." Berlioz's high tenor carried through the deserted alley, and as Mikhail Alexandrovich ventured further and further into the sort of jungle where only a highly educated man can survive, the poet learned volumes of interesting and useful information about the benevolent Egyptian god Osiris, son of heaven and earth, about the Phoenician god Thammuz, about Marduk, even about the lesser-known but menacing god Huitzilopochtli, once greatly revered by the Mexican Aztecs. And just as Mikhail Alexandrovich was describing to the poet how the Aztecs fashioned likenesses of Huitzilopochtli out of dough, the first man appeared in the alley. Afterwards, when, frankly speaking, it was all too late, various agencies would compare their reports containing descriptions of this man. Their juxtaposition cannot help but amaze. Thus, the first states that the man was short, had gold teeth, and limped on his right foot. The second, that the man was of enormous height, had platinum crowns, and limped on his left foot. The third informs laconically that the man had no distinguishing characteristics. One must admit that not a single one of these descriptions is even marginally useful. First things first, the man in question did not limp on any foot, and was neither huge nor diminutive, but simply tall. As for his teeth, he had platinum crowns on the left side of his mouth and gold ones on the right. He wore an expensive grey suit and imported loafers to match. His grey beret was cocked brashly to one side, and a cane with a black handle shaped like a poodle's head was tucked under his arm. Looked to be 40-something, somewhat crooked mouth, smooth shave, dark hair. His right eye was black, the left green for some reason. Dark eyebrows, one set higher than the other. In short, a foreigner. Passing the bench where the editor and the poet were sitting, the foreigner gave them a sidelong glance, stopped, and suddenly sat down on the neighbouring bench, mere steps away from the two companions. "A German," thought Berlioz. "Englishman," thought Homeless. "Must be hot in those gloves, eh?" The foreigner looked over the tall buildings, forming a square around the pond. It was clear that he was seeing the place for the first time and that he found it interesting. He rested his gaze on the upper floors, their windows reflecting a fragmented image of the blinding sun that would soon leave Mikhail Alexandrovich forever. His eyes moved down, where the panes of glass began to darken in the approaching dusk. The foreigner chuckled at something contemptuously and narrowed his eyes, then placed his hands atop his cane and his chin atop his hands.
"For example, Ivan," Berlioz was saying, "you have very nicely and satirically portrayed the birth of Jesus, Son of God. But the irony is that scores of God's sons had already come before Jesus, such as, say, the Phrygian Attis. To put it concisely, none of them was ever actually born, and none of them existed, Jesus included. And so, instead of writing of the Nativity and, say, the coming of the Magi, you must describe the awkward rumours surrounding this birth. Otherwise, according to your narrative, it turns out that he was actually born."
At this point, Homeless made an attempt to put an end to the hiccups that had been tormenting him. He held his breath, which only caused a louder, more painful hiccup. And at the same time, Berlioz interrupted his speech because the foreigner stood up suddenly and headed towards the writers. They looked at him with surprise.
"Please forgive me for taking the liberty," said the newcomer with a foreign accent, but without butchering the words. "Since we are not acquainted, but the subject of your learned discussion is so interesting that..." Here he removed his beret politely, and the companions had no choice but to rise slightly and bow. "No, more like a Frenchman," thought Berlioz. "A Pole?" thought Homeless.
It should be added that straight away the foreigner made a most repulsive impression on the poet, while Berlioz found him rather appealing. Well, not exactly appealing, but, how would you say, intriguing, perhaps.
"May I sit?"
the foreigner inquired politely, and the companions somehow involuntarily moved apart. The foreigner sat nimbly between them and immediately joined the conversation.
"Unless I am mistaken, you had been saying that Jesus never existed?"
the foreigner asked, turning his green left eye to Berlioz.
No, you are not mistaken," Berlioz replied politely. "That is precisely what I said."
"Oh, how interesting," the foreigner exclaimed.
"What the devil does he want?"
wondered Homeless, frowning.
"And you were agreeing with your companion?"
inquired the stranger, turning to the right towards Homeless.
100%,
affirmed the poet, who loved overblown figurative expressions.
"Incredible,"
exclaimed the uninvited guest. Glancing round furtively and lowering his deep voice, he continued,
"Forgive my pestering, but, as I understand, you don't believe in God either."
He put on a frightened look and added,
"I swear I won't tell anyone." "Yes, we do not believe in God," Berlioz said, smiling faintly at the tourist's anxiety, "but we are free to talk about it as we please."
The foreigner leaned back on the bench and asked, practically squealing with curiosity,
"You are atheists?"
"Yes, we are atheists," Berlioz replied, smiling, while Homeless thought angrily,
"Just can't let it go, the foreign snob."
"Oh, how charming,"
cried the extraordinary foreigner, turning his head from side to side to get a look at both writers.
"In our nation, atheism surprises no one,"
Berlioz informed him with diplomatic poise.
"Most of our population has long since made the conscious decision to stop believing in fairy tales about God."
Here the foreigner pulled the following stunt. He got up and shook the amazed editor's hand, saying,
"Allow me to thank you from the bottom of my heart."
"What are you thanking him for?"
Homeless inquired, blinking his eyes.
"For a most important piece of information that I, as a traveller, find extremely interesting,"
explained the foreign oddball, raising his finger meaningfully. Indeed, the important piece of information had evidently had a great impact on the traveller, for he looked fearfully at the buildings around him, as if afraid of seeing an atheist in every window.
"No, he is not an Englishman," thought Berlioz,
while Homeless thought,
Where did he manage to learn Russian like that? That's what I'd like to know.
And frowned again.
But allow me to ask you,
the foreign guest inquired, after some anxious pondering,
what would you do with the proofs of divine existence, of which, as it is known, there are exactly 5? Alas, Berlioz replied regretfully, not a single proof is worth a damn, and mankind has long since consigned them to the archives. After all, you must agree that no proof of God's existence can be found in the realm of reason.
Bravo!
Cried the foreigner.
Bravo!
You have fully restated the thoughts of the restless old Emmanuel on this matter. But here's the embarrassing part. He fully demolished all 5 proofs and then, as if mocking himself, devised a 6th one of his own.
Kant's proof,
the educated editor retorted with a thin smile,
is equally unconvincing. No wonder Schiller said that Kant's discussions on this issue can only satisfy slaves, while Strauss simply laughed at the proof.
Berlioz spoke and wondered silently,
but really, who is he? And how can he speak Russian so well?
They ought to give this Kant 3 years or so in Solovki for these proofs of his,
Ivan Nikolaevich slammed quite unexpectedly.
Ivan,
whispered an embarrassed Berlioz. But the idea of sending Kant to Solovki not only failed to surprise the foreigner, it absolutely delighted him.
Precisely, precisely, he exclaimed,
and his green left eye sparkled at Berlioz.
That's just the place for him.
Why, I told him back then at breakfast,
say what you will, Professor, but I think you've cooked up something incoherent. It may be clever, perhaps, but what a pain to understand. People will just laugh at you.
Berlioz's eyes bulged out.
At breakfast? To Kant? What's he blathering about? He thought.
However,
the foreigner continued to the poet, unfazed by Berlioz's astonishment,
it's impossible to toss him into Solovki, if only for the reason that he has now spent over 100 years in a place significantly further away. A place whence he cannot be extracted by any means, I assure you.
Pity,
replied the belligerent poet.
I pity it too,
the stranger confirmed, his eye flashing, and continued,
but here's what bothers me. If there is no God, then may I ask who governs man's existence and all world order?
Man himself governs it,
Berlioz replied quickly and sternly to this admittedly rather ambiguous question.
I beg pardon, the stranger said softly. In order to govern, one needs to have a definite plan for some reasonable length of time. Allow me to ask you how man can govern anything, considering that not only is he unable to plan for even a laughably short period, say, 1,000 years, but that he cannot even vouch for tomorrow.
Here the stranger turned to Berlioz.
Indeed. Imagine that you, for instance, begin to govern and direct yourself and others, and you start to develop a taste for it, so to speak.
And suddenly you develop
sarcoma of the lungs.
The stranger grinned sweetly, as if the thought of sarcoma of the lungs brought him much pleasure.
Yes, sarcoma.
He repeated the sonorous word, grinning like a cat.
And thus your government is over. You are no longer interested in anyone's fates but your own. Your relatives begin to lie to you.
Suspecting something amiss, you first run to the best doctors, then to the quacks,
and sometimes even to the fortune tellers. As the first, so are the second and the third, completely useless. You understand that yourself. Everything ends quite tragically.
He who so recently fancied himself in control of something ends up lying motionless in a wooden box.
Realizing that the horizontal man is now worthless,
the others burn him in a furnace. Could be even worse, though. One moment a man decides to visit Kislovodsk.
Here the foreigner narrowed his eyes at Berlioz.
Simplest thing in the world to do.
Except
he can't even accomplish that, because the next moment he slips and falls under a tram for some unknown reason. Certainly you don't suggest that he disposed of himself. Wouldn't it be more reasonable to think that someone else disposed of him?
The stranger let out a peculiar snicker. Berlioz took in the unpleasant story about the sarcoma and the tram with the greatest attention, and disturbing thoughts began to gnaw at him.
He's no foreigner. He's no foreigner, thought Berlioz. A very strange character, but hang on a second, who is he?
I see you want to smoke,
the stranger said unexpectedly to Homeless.
Which brand would you prefer?
What, have you got different ones or something?
The poet asked moodily, for he had run out of cigarettes.
Which would you prefer? The stranger repeated.
Fine, home brand,
the poet replied unpleasantly.
The guest immediately pulled a cigarette case out of his pocket and offered it to Homeless.
Home brand.
The editor and the poet were not so much amazed by the fact that the case contained precisely home brand cigarettes as by the case itself. It was of gigantic proportions and made of solid gold. As it opened, a diamond triangle flashed on the lid with white and blue fire. The writer's thoughts diverged.
Berlioz, no, a foreigner.
And Homeless,
well, damn it to hell, ha!
The poet and the owner of the cigarette case lit up, while the non-smoking Berlioz refused.
I should refute him thus,
Berlioz decided.
Yes, man is mortal, no one denies that, but the fact is that...
But before he could pronounce the words, the foreigner spoke.
Yes, man is mortal, but that's only half the trouble. The problem is
that he is unexpectedly mortal. There's the trick.
And, in fact, he can't even say what he'll be doing tonight.
What an awkward way to pose a question, mused Berlioz, and retorted, Well, that's an exaggeration. Tonight is more or less clear to me. Now, naturally, if a brick falls on my head on Brunner...
A brick, the stranger interrupted forcefully, is never going to fall on anyone for no reason. More specifically, let me assure you that you can feel completely safe in that regard. You will die a different death.
Perhaps you know which exactly and could tell me,
Berlioz asked with understandable sarcasm, venturing into what was becoming a truly silly conversation.
Gladly,
the stranger replied. He looked over Berlioz as if he were fitting a suit and muttered something through his teeth.
1, 2, Mercury in the second house, the moon has departed, 6... Disaster. Evening. 7.
At last he declared loudly and cheerfully,
You will be beheaded.
Homeless stared at the insolent stranger with savage fury. Grinning crookedly, Berlioz asked,
And by whom exactly? Enemies? Foreign interventionists?
No, came the answer. A Russian woman, a member of the Komsomol.
Berlioz mumbled, irritated by the stranger's little joke.
Forgive me, but that's less than likely.
Forgive me as well, the stranger replied. But it is so. Oh, yes, and I also wanted to ask what you were going to be doing tonight, unless it's a secret.
No secret. In a little while I'll drop by my place on Sedovaya, and then at 10 I'm going to chair a meeting at Masolit.
That cannot possibly be,
the foreigner objected firmly.
Why is that?
Because,
the foreigner said and squinted at the sky, where black birds darted silently in anticipation of the evening cool.
Because Anushka has already bought the sunflower oil. Not only bought it, in fact, but spilled it as well. So the meeting will not occur.
Quite understandably, this statement was met with silence.
Excuse me,
Berlioz began after a pause, glancing at the absurd foreigner.
What does sunflower oil have to do with anything? And who is Anushka?
The sunflower oil has nothing to do with anything,
Homeless said abruptly, evidently bent on declaring war on the interloper.
Have you, sir, ever spent time in a mental institution?
Ivan!
Mikhail Alexandrovich exclaimed quietly. But the foreigner was not a bit insulted, and laughed heartily.
Of course I have, and more than once, he exclaimed, laughing, but his unsmiling eye was fixed on the poet. Is there a place I haven't been to? Pity, though. I never got around to asking the professor there what schizophrenia was. I guess you'll have to ask him yourself, Ivan Nikolaevich.
How do you know my name?
Please, my dear Ivan Nikolaevich, who hasn't heard of you?
The foreigner produced yesterday's issue of the Literary Gazette from his pocket, and Ivan Nikolaevich recognized his own likeness on the front page, with his own poem immediately below. But while the proof of fame and popularity had so pleased him yesterday, it brought no joy to the poet this time around.
"Excuse me," he said with a sinister expression. "Could you possibly wait here a minute? I'd like a couple of words with my companion."
"Oh, it would be my pleasure," exclaimed the stranger. "It's so nice here under the lindens. And besides, I'm in no hurry."
"Listen, Misha," the poet whispered, pulling Berlioz aside. "He's not a tourist. He's a spy, a Russian emigre who sneaked back into the country. Ask him for his papers, or he'll get away."
"You think so?" Berlioz whispered worriedly and thought. "He's right."
"Trust me on this one," the poet rasped in his ear. "He's playing dumb, trying to pry something out of us. You heard his Russian."
The poet looked sidelong at the stranger as he spoke to make sure the man did not take off.
"Come on, let's detain him or he'll escape."
The poet took Berlioz by the arm and pulled him towards the bench. The stranger no longer sat, but stood beside it, holding some sort of booklet in a dark grey binding, a thick envelope made of expensive paper, and a business card.
"Forgive me, but in the heat of our debate, I completely forgot to introduce myself. This is my card, my passport, and my invitation to visit Moscow to provide consulting services,"
the stranger said gravely and fixed the writers with a piercing look. The two became embarrassed.
The devil! He heard everything, thought Berlioz, and gestured politely that there was no need to check papers.
While the foreigner was thrusting them at the editor, the poet had time to see the title Professor in foreign letters on the card, as well as the first letter of a surname, a W.
"Nice to meet you,"
the editor mumbled uncomfortably in the meantime, and the foreigner returned the documents to his pocket. Relations thus re-established, all three sat back down on the bench.
"You were invited here as a consultant, Professor?"
asked Berlioz.
"Yes, a consultant."
"Are you German?" inquired Homeless.
"Me?" the professor asked and paused to think. "Yes, German, I suppose," he said.
"You speak Russian pretty well," Homeless noted.
"Oh, I am actually a polyglot. I know a great number of languages,"
the professor replied.
"What's your area of expertise?"
Berlioz inquired.
"I specialize in black magic."
"How do you like that?"
flashed in Mikhail Alexandrovich's head.
And you were invited here with regard to that area?"
he asked, stammering briefly.
"Yes, that one,"
the professor confirmed and explained.
"The state library here unearthed some authentic manuscripts of the necromancer Jaber of Oriak, 10th century, and I am needed to help decipher them. I am the only specialist in the world on the subject."
"Ah, so you're a historian?"
Berlioz asked with considerable relief and respect.
"I am a historian,"
the scholar verified.
"This evening we'll have a pretty curious history right here on the Patriarchs,"
he added out of nowhere. And once again, both the poet and the editor were taken aback. The professor beckoned them both closer, and as they leaned towards him, he whispered, "Keep in mind that Jesus did exist."
"You see, Professor," Berlioz answered with a forced smile, "although we respect your considerable knowledge, we happen to hold a different point of view on the matter."
"No need for any points of view," the strange professor replied. "He simply existed, and that's that."
"But some sort of proof is required," Berlioz began.
"No proofs required either,"
the professor replied, and began narrating quietly, his accent somehow disappearing.
"It's all quite simple. In a white cape,